When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's go!
Binge Town, how are we feeling today? It's your boy PD here, aka Producer Dave, here with Kyle, Paul, and Alki. As you can probably already guess by the episode title, we are continuing our coverage of the Better Squid Game series Alice in Borderlands with episodes 5 and 6. These were definitely two of the longer episodes this season. We got a nice blend of physical and mental action, as well as some interesting backstories on some of our favorite characters. We have a lot to unpack, but let's kick it off as usual with the group's general thoughts on these two episodes.
Stories on backstories. I love it. It's like, it. First of all, might as well just get this out of the way. Out of all those backstories, they all fit sort of into our theory that we've been going around that, like, these people are, you know, not contributing to the society, maybe not the best people in the world. So that seems to be holding up still. So
less so with Chasia, I feel like.
Who's basically taking bribes and like killing other little kids.
He was, but physically it's not like he wanted to be doing that. It's not like he genuinely was a bad person accepting those bribes.
Was that bribes? Is that what that was?
I don't know if it was bribes, but I just assumed that it was just him getting handed letters of people that were just
looking the other way.
Yeah,
part of the machine. Whatever. We can argue this all day, and this cannot be a thing.
Argument that he's like not conforming to the society around him, which would still fit in, which is trying to just put the VIPs in front of the donor lines. Anyway.
These two episodes were fantastic. They were crazy long, both over an hour. Mm-hmm. That was nuts. But they were definitely really good. Got a little bit of everybody. I love how we don't always have to focus on Arisa now. We can go out on different storylines and watch them play the games. It's sick. Everybody got a time in the spotlight, and I am so excited for the end of the season.
I completely agree with you, Paul.
I'm
depressed and excited, but I agree with you, Paul, in the sense that it's just great seeing games get completed by people that aren't the main, like, that isn't the main character, Arisu. Like, just seeing Chasia and Kuina doing their own thing, like, it's just great to see.
Even Randos. I mean, the Jack of Spades, or no, that was Kuina.
Queen of Diamonds fell. That was in the Arisu part. Finally. Yeah.
I was waiting for somebody else to do some of the work, and at least they got one.
Yeah, it makes sense that our main protagonist wouldn't have to beat all 12 games by themselves.
Yeah, these were good. I mean, it was a lot of content, like we've said, but we dipped our toes in kind of everyone. I love that we're getting like consistent, and it's probably not enough for me personally, but I'm sure it will increase in the future, or at the very least, she'll bring whatever knowledge she learns back, and it'll play a bigger part. But I just like the fact that we're just getting her exploring a little bit, which is really cool. There was some nice, maybe not like confirmation for me, but some things that I've talked about theory wise in season one came a little bit true. This one, which was nice, with number two and the AKA the King of Diamonds.
That was
really cool to see. That was a good game. That was just interesting television, honestly. I feel like episode six was the longest, but it didn't like feel like it was the longest. I thought it was just like, I kind of feel like I just crushed it when I watched it, which was nice.
It's because it's Chasia. It's all Chasia. Whenever he's on the screen, those minutes fly.
Yeah, I enjoyed all the both episodes. I thought the first, the fifth one?
Mm-hmm.
Episode five was like jam-packed. So much shit went on, and it was very entertaining. With the tail end of it, of the game with the Queen of, it was what? Queen of?
Spades.
Spades. Queen of Spades. She was cool. She was badass and a bitch. and then I enjoyed the game with Chasia. It was a mind-boggling game, strategic. The math aspect was interesting. Admittedly, as an engineer, I'm embarrassed to admit that it kind of went over my head a little bit. I had to think about it a little bit, but the logic of it started to make sense as they were going through it. And it was just, it was very unique. It was a unique game.
When you bring up something like that too, with when we're watching it as viewers and we don't understand the game in the moment and we have to like watch people participate to finally get a full understanding of how the game is played, it just kind of shows that if we were thrown into these games, we'd be so fucked. Like if we just had one time read aloud of what the rules were, I would be so screwed, honestly. Oh, yeah.
Easily be boiled alive.
Yeah, like those rules, I was trying to keep up with the King of Diamonds. Granted, I'm not the smartest person, but still, like, it was so hard understanding what the objective was and, like, just trying to understand how the best way to approach it is. So these, you're right, Alec, definitely some tough games for sure.
I got it. I knew it right away. Yeah, I didn't miss once. I guess the exact number every single time.
I bet.
Of course, Paul's also an engineer. So any other thoughts from you, Alky, or anyone else before we kick this off? I'll take silence as a no. So we open up with Adisu and Agni just kind of picking up exactly where we left off in episode 4. They just kind of have a quick conversation about the purpose of what their lives are, essentially. Adisu comes to the conclusion that he doesn't need a reason to live since humans just naturally want to live. And Agni seemed kind of envious, honestly, that Adisu has the will to want to live, because I don't know if it's here. It's definitely later on when we see the flashes of the Hatter, who's kind of tormenting him for all of his sins. So Agni clearly is leaning more of not wanting to live side, whereas Adisu just, he doesn't even need a reason to live anymore. He just wants to live. That's just human enough for him. And then here we also get a little bit of backstory on that new character from the last episode. Her name is Akane, which I'm definitely going to be saying Akame a lot, I feel like. But we get a little bit backstory on her. Essentially, her and her friends are total bitches in the real world. And she's...
Mean girls.
Yeah, they're mean girls, pretty much. And she's talking about how... She's just bragging about how she's a homewrecker with her friends.
Hey, dude, he came on to her.
Oh yeah, sorry, he came on to her, so he's a douche, but she's also a bitch for encouraging it. But all of a sudden we get the fireworks, which imply that she just immediately gets transported to Borderland. But my big question here was, like, when I rewatched it, there were like 50 people that turned around to look at those fireworks. Like, did all 50 of those people get transported then, or do you think it was like just her? Do you think it was the group of friends too? Because I was totally expecting to see the friends in the game with her, but they obviously weren't there. So I'm not sure if you guys picked up on that or have any thoughts on that.
I honestly was a little thrown off when everybody turned and looked.
Yeah,
it would have been. We only saw Chota and like Karube and Arisu going up and looking. So I don't know what that means.
It would have been
also like we've only seen the big three, our main three originally, transfer over, I guess, for lack of a better term. And they were like in a secluded dark place alone.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I feel like it would be shocking if they just got transported on the sidewalk or in the middle of the crosswalk like that. Because, like, again, going back to the conversation we had last episode, what happens in the quote unquote real world or the world that they came from when they disappear and come to Borderland? Like, did they just pop out of existence in their world? Like, or was it a delay? Like, they went home and then once they got into bed, they were gone. Like, it's weird. There was
like a couple minutes. Like, they see the fireworks and then they go in the bathroom and then you see the flashing of the lights and then they're in Borderland, which, so I guess there's a couple minutes and maybe like all those people, the 50 people that turn around, like dispersed, and then when they were secluded, got transported or something. Maybe it's impossible to guess, but I just thought if you guys had any comments on like the fact that 50 people literally turned around and all looked at them.
Well, in the first episode, like, the fireworks happened and that was when they were still running away. So gotta assume that it didn't happen immediately. Like, she probably went into, like, turned down her little street on her way home and like some little alley. So next thing you know, she like woke up and house in Borderland. I don't know, it's a guess.
Yeah,
but that doesn't mean that the rest of those 50 people didn't also have a similar experience. They just didn't teleport in the same location. Maybe
it's aliens, you know.
I don't know,
aliens, man. Abducting them.
I mean, it's not out of the question.
I really want to know, and this is jumping ahead, not necessarily with the episodes, but like, how many seasons are they going to do? Because the manga is only like 70 or so chapters, right? And episode 5 jumped through like 3 or 4 games in the background. We saw some things happen. Like, I wonder, in the manga, did they explore those games where they played out the way that we saw, like, Chishia's games being played out? Probably not. You know, it's only 74 episodes. I'm really curious, like, how far we are right now. I'm not going to look it up because then I'm going to get it all fucking spoiled.
Yeah, but I literally did that last episode.
Shut up. Actually, nothing got spoiled, but, like, I just, you know, you get so, it's so dangerous. Yeah.
So we see Akane barely survive the escape game. Oh, and by the way, for everyone listening, I should have mentioned this before getting into it, but we're going to kind of break this episode into just character buckets. We're just going to cover kind of the Akane backstory into the Arisu, Agune, and Akane versus King of Spades. Then we'll cover everyone else like Usagi and maybe not in that particular order. We'll see where it goes from here, but we'll just continue on with the Akane backstory. And so we see that she is the only survivor of her game. She barely escapes this game is called Escape. Yeah, like how would Arisu even be able to, like, me and Aoki were talking.
There's no, like, strategy involved.
The moment you read Escape, your mind just has to know to run. And that, even then, you're still kind of fucked. Like, I really had no idea.
And the game was like boiling water. Worst type of way to go. So yeah, it was insane.
Imagine that being your first game. That being that's your first game. Like
how would Arisu even in that moment? Like, how would mental skills help you at all?
I mean, she barely made it. She lost her fucking leg.
Yeah, so
mental to like make herself crawl out of that thing. I mean, Jesus Christ. Honestly, this backstory made me like her a lot. Like a lot.
Yeah, I think she's pretty cool too.
I like how we get her. Like, at first I was like, when we see her talking with her friends, I'm like, okay, this girl, I clearly dislike her. But then the way the game turns out and just from her experiences, she does change and definitely for the better. But so she beats the game.
This world is to make people better.
Yeah, that's all.
It's like mastermind evil mind thing.
Yeah, but so she crawls out of the game. Just her leg is completely destroyed from a piece of rebar that it got caught on, and then so she crawls her way to I guess like a pharmacy where she meets a doctor who agrees to cut her leg off, but in exchange for sex, which was fucking. I mean, this was so mentally fucked up. But
yeah,
I mean,
it's crazy.
She's a beast, though.
Yeah,
he's like, you want money? And he's like, money? What is money gonna do for me here? And I was like, whoa, this guy's a freak. And she's a child.
She's a survivor, man.
Yeah. Well, you guys, like, I don't know. I mean, it's just, this world is just gruesome and distorted, and that was a very good example of it.
Do you think he took care of the leg first and then banged, or banged first and then took care of the leg?
I think he probably banged first.
I would hope he took care of the leg.
The gangrene leg right up above his shoulders.
So after we get the backstory of Akane, we get our group again, Arisu, Agune, and Akane coming up with a plan to take down the King of Spades. They determine the best way to do that would be by leading him to a cliff. I guess that just gives him less options to escape from. And if they need to, like, he just wouldn't have a way to get out of whatever pickle they put him in. So night falls upon the crew, and of course, Arisu is the juicy bait, which he should have just known immediately that he was going to be. But the King of Spades does take the bait. He shows up, and we get into a little brouhaha here. And the only complaint I'm going to have here is obviously the King of Spades should have just mowed down Arisu like way earlier than he should have. Like, there were so many, when we're seeing him with the night vision, I'm just thinking, all right, are you going to shoot him? And he just doesn't. He waits till he gets the really close shot. And then that's when Agune pulls out his gun and saves Arisu.
Yeah. I mean, the trap wire kind of worked a little bit in that sense. Honestly, this whole scene reminded me of watching the original Predator movie with Arnold. So I liked it a lot.
This made me personally get more fearful of the King of Spades, honestly. Now that we see him not just like mowing down innocent civilians in like an open setting, and we actually see some of the combat skills of the King of Spades, now I'm kind of a little bit more amped to see him in the final showdown of whenever that is. But I think this was a good hype up to introduce and pile on the abilities of the King of Spades.
Yeah, Agune called him a mercenary.
Mm-hmm. I almost had the opposite reaction. I think Agune's like attitude towards it, like, dude, he's just a man. Like, we can easily take down a man. Like, it's so cool. And they honestly, first of all, tricked the King of Spades and actually got him in a vulnerable position. But of course, he like snuck out of it and escaped. But I loved how Akane just takes charge and is like, "We're gonna be smarter than him, and outmuscle him." And it's just, I love him so much. I am so happy that he's back.
I agree with you, Paul. He has experience. He has, you know, he's an ex-police officer. He probably has some sort of combat experience in some capacity. Like, he's trained for these types of situations. Like, he knows how to go on a manhunt, and he showed his skills very well.
Yeah. I'm glad it didn't work out, though.
Yeah, it was too easy because we were watching it, and we were like, there's no way. Like, this is so easy if they just get him right now. It's like such a big obstacle.
Yeah, it was definitely too easy from at least watching his perspective. But I did love Odyssey when he first fires the shotgun and he just gets completely thrown back by it, because he just, obviously Odyssey's never handled a gun of that caliber at all. And
Paul, like, what do you think of that technique?
I felt so unsafe for Agony and Akane just being anywhere near Arisu with that thing.
Elbows up, baby.
Yeah, his elbow was literally pointing to the sky somehow.
I know. And of course, he's making that like crazy face when he hears rustling, and he's like,
yeah.
But it's perfect because obviously he's never touched it in real life. Like, he plays all these games with all these guns, all these warfare games. But like, when it comes to real life, he's like, holy fuck, how do you handle this thing?
Speaking he wouldn't make one day in the Rough Grouse Society.
Nah, not one day.
Speaking as someone who's recently fired a weapon and like a high caliber shotgun, strong gauge, they're freaking powerful. Like, I don't know what gauge that was, but it could happen to any of us. It literally happened to me like 4 weeks ago.
And Odyssey's like a skinnier guy, so that thing definitely fucked him up for sure. But overall, pretty cool showdown. I think, like, again, just emphasizing the King of Spades abilities to just be a mercenary, just get out of those tight situations in himself. We do see Odyssey falls from the cliff really quick, and here pretty much Agony, the plan fails, and we're just going to continue on with Odyssey just wandering around. Is this, me and Alki are always asking this, are we still in Tokyo? Like, do I call this Tokyo?
It seems like, I mean, they have like a map of Tokyo that they're using with their compass is what it seemed like to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. And they're saying we should be right above this old train station. I was thinking it's so far out that the nature, exactly.
Yeah. And one thing I want to mention before we get away from the whole King of Spades thing is that it really shows how much Akane cares about Agony. I mean, she literally puts her life on the line for him. She like protects him essentially at the end there. So I thought that was nice to see too. It just adds more dimension to her character, because we just see her like fucking dicking around, like she's trying to bang Arisu.
And then, I know, like, it was awesome. And she's then, like, yeah, you're nice enough.
Yeah, and then Agony comes up and she like is like afraid, like her dad's gonna yell at her almost.
She's like, sorry, you said no before, so don't be mad at me. And he's like, dude, I don't give a shit. And I love how literally right then he's like talking about how they're gonna take him down. He's only a man, throws the shotgun to Arisu, he walks away, and she's like, oh my god, he's so cool. it's so funny because we're all thinking.
Oh, I was thinking the same thing in that moment. I was like, yeah, he definitely is a badass.
The relationship reminds me of in Vagabond, the guy with the ball and sickle and the girl that he trains and raises. It just reminded me of that a little bit.
Yeah, definitely some similarities there. But yeah, Odyssey is just pretty much making his way around Tokyo. He is getting to more vegetative areas for sure. And we do see him pull up to the end of a Queen of Diamonds game that got beaten by a bunch of random people. And to be honest, there was a lot of people walking out of that game alive. Like,
fucked her up.
Like 20 to 50 people walking out of there. Yeah, I wonder how many people had to participate in that game in the first place. But they do beat it, which I think at when we watch that blimp go down, that is the third or fourth game, I believe. So Chishiya, Arisu, this one. And then there was one other random one, I think, that gets beat. Or is this the one that I'm thinking of?
This might be the one you're thinking of.
Okay. So are we at three then still? Either way, Kuina is also taking down one of the cards at the same time. So that would make it five. I believe that was the Jack of Spades.
Yeah, Jack of Spades. It looked like the game was literally Kuina kicked the shit out of everyone.
Yeah, it was just
free for all. Last one standing wins or something crazy.
Yeah, literally. And they all just teamed up on her, it looks like, and she just kicked the shit out of all of them.
She was like, see, these lanky arms are easier to whip around and fucking slap you in the dick.
Man, and that fucking bikini top and jeans, she's just kicking and everyone's dicks in it. It was great.
And she's in the bathroom later, like cleaning herself up. She's like, damn, man, space cars are the real deal. But
yeah,
I'm not going to fucking lose. And I'm like, oh, God, you're so cool.
You're damn right. Queen is not losing to any of them. And then lastly, for this set of characters, like I had said earlier, we do see Agony having, he sees visions of the Hatter, who is pretty much telling him that he's worthless and that he doesn't, like, what are you looking for? Like a hero's death kind of thing, which at first I was really hyped to see the Hatter. And then I kind of realized, okay, this isn't like actually the Hatter. This is just clearly Agony's dark side, just kind of giving him some shit for what he's done for the Witch Hunt game. We do see some flashbacks of there and just get reminded of that Agony did feel some emotions in that moment, even though he was ruthless and killing all those people. Like, he was feeling terrible about himself, and that continues to haunt him now. So if we have no more comments on any of those characters, we'll continue with Usagi next. So Usagi had gotten separated from Arisu at the end of last episode from the King of Spades, and she makes her way to a similar town that to which Arisu is in, with a lot of vegetation and everything, and she finds her way into a house looking for food, but she's surprised to see that two others have already beat her there. One is a girl, the other is a kid, which made me immediately think, how long has this kid been here? And based on the conversations that Usagi and the girl were having, it didn't seem like that long. Like, he might have been teleported like maybe right before the Witch Hunt game. This is me just speculating, but do you guys have any ideas? Like, he clearly didn't, like, clearly the Spades game that he played was, had to have been the first one, I guess, right?
I don't know. That's a good question. Yeah.
I mean, they said she said he only has a couple days left on his visa to Usagi. So I don't know if you played a game before, but this is definitely where the theory of not contributing to society or doesn't conform kind of hits this feeling. Because, like, why the fuck is a kid being brought into here? My initial thought was like, okay, maybe the kid was like born here.
It
could have been the same thing as we were talking in the last episode where, Paul, I think it was you saying, like, Chota should have been the one teleported, but because Karube and Arisu were with him, he also got teleported. And so maybe it was one of those situations where the parents were supposed to come, but then the kid was with them, and so he
collateral damage.
Yeah. I love the hater level of that Chota theory. It's great. It's so good.
It wasn't clear, though, if the parents died in the game or before.
It sounded like it was in the game too.
Assume that they protected him and helped him win some visas. That's all.
Yeah, okay. That was the assumption that I was rolling with.
Either way, the kid was either in his first or second game to me. There was like no way he had been around more than that. I just think he wouldn't be alive if that was the case.
It would be very hard for him to survive that long.
So then we got a quick flashback to Usagi's dad, who is talking hypotheticals. If he were to ever disappear, weird that he would bring that up. If he were to ever disappear, he would want Usagi to live a full life. Sketchy. I don't know.
I don't know, though, because he's climbed Mount Everest before. Like, when you climb mountains like that, like, you are accepting that every time you go out, like, you could die. So yeah,
when he said it at first, it was like, okay, that's really sketchy. But then he did continue to elaborate, like, look, I love living in the mountains and like being in the mountains. If they take my life, like, that's how I want to go. So he did make it a little bit better by the end. But at first I was like, Theories.
Yeah, it did seem like an odd, like, what was really the point of it so much? Like, I guess she was she seeing, like, herself a little bit in the kid because of her dad?
Probably.
Yeah.
And I think they had the whole emotional connection where even if we do win and go home, it's not going to be the same world.
Okay, fair.
So I think that's what she was like. I can't leave him behind.
Also, I think it was one of the turning points in Usagi's and her reverting back to like having the drive to survive.
Oh yeah, this
because the conversation was like, you know, I want you to live a full life, and you know, she probably hasn't felt that she wants to or needs to in a long time, and the kid brought that out of her. She had that flashback, and then she decided to fight for him in the game.
And if you think about it too, like, even though Arisu has clearly been an important person to her, she, I guess, over time has learned that Arisu is capable of handling himself, whereas now she's legitimately looking after a child, and that kind of forces her to change this perspective on life. Whereas like when she was partnering with Arisu, it's like, okay, like, I'll play the games, but like, you clearly are good at these, whereas now she's partnering with a child who she needs to protect and has a reason to protect. So definitely gives her, after these episodes, I will admit, stock back up for Usagi for sure.
Oh, fuck yeah.
But so the last character bucket before we just wrap up this episode is Anne. Anne is still just wandering around by herself. She's in the woods when her compass starts to act weird. And she starts to mark her path, which at first I took as like she was letting someone know that she was being like, or to let people behind her know where she was going. But I think that was more for directional purposes.
Yeah.
And so she's continuing to wander when she reaches a mountain range, which is wild, and says, "This isn't the world I know." I personally thought of it as like we're getting close to the game, like out of bounds area. Like when we're playing Apex, you have the out of bounds area. When you play Warzone, there's the out of bounds. Like, I just wonder if she were to choose to go down those mountains, would she get killed? Is that actually still part of the game? So it was pretty cool seeing now this is not just like we're not just in Tokyo anymore. Like there's Tokyo, and then outside of Tokyo is completely different than what we know.
Yeah, it's interesting because I guess you could. Like, there's not really a limit. She could go and hike all those mountains, but she needs to go back in time and win a game before her visa expires. So
you're
she's
right.
Like, she's like kind of on a timer.
So that maybe makes it an out of bounds in the sense that, like, if there's nothing out there, there's no reason for you to explore, kind of.
Yeah, your visa definitely limits you. Mm-hmm. And not having a car.
Also, you know how we were questioning all those towns or like, is this Tokyo now? Like, where are they? It's just, like how Annie mentioned in that film, how the vegetation is growing at an exponential rate. That's just what's happening. It's just taking over pieces of Tokyo.
Like, do you think the mountains maybe like 2 years ago, like if someone had walked in Anne's exact spot 2 years ago, do you think mountains wouldn't have been there? Like, do you think mountains are also part of the vegetation overrun?
I think that the mountains were likely there. I think how wild it might be, like the nature and stuff, because if it's that close to Tokyo, that means people tour it and like do trails, and there's probably like lodges where you can hike and shit like that. What she saw was like straight up jungle.
Yeah, it's so confusing, right? Because by all those mountains being there, it seems like they just got a copy, or they took the Tokyo up and placed it in this mountain range.
Yeah.
But then later on, you get Kuina, who goes back to the hospital bed and sees the same pictures and everything. So it's I'm so back and forth with what's confusing. Going on with everything they're giving.
Well, yeah, I don't think that's like anywhere like right outside of Tokyo looks like where Anne was at.
Yeah. My only response would be what the Queen of Spades says is, you'll find out once you beat everything, pretty much. Like,
stupid.
Yeah, it sucks. But to wrap up this episode, Usagi and the kid enter the Queen of Spades game. And of course, Arisu knew that Usagi was going to be there, just based on the fact that he knew, I guess, her visa was running out, and as well as she would want to do a physical game versus any of the other ones. And we do also see early on that people are very willing to turn against the child if they need to in order to survive. And so the game starts, and we do see that the queen is a female. So still sticking to the, you know, king is a male, jack is a male, queen is a female kind of.
And they do refer to the king as he and stuff like that when they're talking about him, Agony at least. So like, again, you think that if it goes with the gender, but I would not be surprised at all if the King of Spades takes off the mask and it's like Mira or something.
I feel like they're like just leading us like subconsciously, like, okay, we're putting it in this in your mind that the king is a guy and the queen's a girl. And then at some point they're just going to flip the script on us. I agree with all of what we've been saying the past couple episodes. But yeah, to kind of skip over everything pretty much in this the rest of the game, immediately the red team or the citizen team goes up 17-3. So the three on the challengers team being Usagi, Arisu, and the kids, those are the only three that are left. And we also learn that players are more willing to join the queen's side in order to survive because they can just play in her game over and over again, in which she just wins. So they're just going to live their lives just playing this one game. But they're surviving, so that sounds good to them, and they
I'm a little confused about that, only because like she starts this game with four people. She could not have possibly won the last game with four people. So where did the other people that were on her team go?
I think they played.
Well,
oh, what you're saying,
it doesn't mean that there was like 20 people in the first round. It could have been like eight people. Could have been like seven people walked up.
And like the first time, the last time the game was played?
Yeah.
And if that was the first time the game was ever played?
I don't know if it was the first. I'm just trying to theorize. Yeah.
Seemed odd to me that she was recruiting and got up to, you know, almost 19 people. But then she started the game with only four. And her whole line was like, you can stay on my team forever.
So, I'm thinking that they just like kind of, they're just bench players. It's like, okay, here's four that come play. We win. There's the next four. You just keep cycling everyone's visas. Yeah. I mean, you can probably play that game multiple times in the day too.
And in reality, it literally doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I took it as these players were literally just playing the game over and over. And as long as they didn't get picked as like the king in the game, they were good and they could just join the queen's team. But
like the queen was the only citizen on their team, right? Like all on that page. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But yes. So episode six opens with Usagi defending Arisu. In the last episode, the queen had admitted to wanting Arisu on her side and just sends all the troops to go capture Arisu. And Usagi puts up a pretty good fight. Didn't realize that she had some fight in her. I knew she was a good runner. She's a runner. She's a track star.
This was fucking awesome, man. Like Usagi literally jumps down in between Arisu and the queen to defend him. Beats her ass. Well, not really. It was kind of
not really.
Yeah. It was a draw, and she kind of gets her ass beat. But it was she was so badass, going everywhere, back and forth. And I kind of like that the queen was just like, "I want him on my team. I don't want him to die." Because at any time they could have just ran up to the king, turned the king, who was the kid.
No,
and
they couldn't.
Won.
You could. Yeah, the king can't be turned.
That was one of the rules. That
I thought it was like if you turn the king, it's game over. But gotcha. No, you're probably right.
And you were probably thinking the whole time, like, why is this kid just sitting here at the start point the whole time?
Yeah. I didn't really understand that, but okay. That makes sense.
Why do we think that she wanted Arisu?
Maybe she just saw the potential, like,
it's hot.
Yeah, I was gonna say Akane admits to being Arisu being hot, so maybe she just wanted
I don't know. I'm thinking it was with Kyle.
It's like, why would she want Arisu? Because Arisu is clearly the antithesis to her. Like, what doesn't make sense if she'd want him?
Well, now that
I was also shocked that, like, he's not like the physical guy. Like, he's the brains, but he couldn't have used any of those skills up until this point. I mean, it's obviously he's the main character, so he's going to survive this long. But now, like, we've never seen that out of him that, like, would make sense that he would be able to survive this game up until the last couple of people over all these other people.
Now that I'm thinking about it, I feel like maybe at the start of the game, like, she had the cameras, she was watching everyone's interactions, and she saw the interaction between Arisu, Usagi, and the kid. And because she's just, I guess, like a little bit more on the evil side, she was like, I want to fuck up that like little love triangle there, so bring me the boy, you know, kind of thing. But
she was definitely anti Usagi, so
yeah,
I think she was jealous. She kept going to her hypocrite, and like she was like, I don't want fake ideals in my world. So I think she was definitely jealous of Usagi.
I took it as she was getting not like marching orders, but like someone higher up than her was like in her ear of like, we need that guy.
Yeah,
I could.
Oh, Arisu, I heard stories of you. Okay,
yeah,
there's rumors going around, but she's pretty fucking evil to pick the kid because literally that's the one person that's like guaranteed to die. She's like, all right, I'm gonna pick this 10-year-old. Mm-hmm. Jesus Christ, you're not like the king of clubs at all, who was just chilling and fucking vibing.
Kuma would have never picked a child. Well, he might have because he does value everyone's life very equally. So he's probably like, oh, kid, you're equal as the rest of us. You're the leader.
I will say, man, she was smoking hot, dude.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
He was like one of the hottest characters in the show so far. I think so.
There's just attractive women everywhere in the show.
Dude, but she was up there. I think she was the hottest, maybe.
The fighting definitely always notches you up a few ranks, too, for sure. So Usagi goes on the counter. And we do see when it's the challenger's turn, she does manage to capture three people from the queen's side, and she goes into this deep speech about wanting to go home. Even if that place sucks, it'll just be worth it to go because that world at least shows kindness. You're actually kind of free there and you won't have to turn against one another. That's the gist of it. It was a lot better presented from her mouth rather than mine, but I thought it was a really good speech. And again, this was probably the moment for me where I was like, okay, Usagi stock back up. I'm glad we didn't have her being this like conflicting character for the entire season. At the very end, she kind of has this realization that I want to be with the team. It was a quick turnaround for it. So looking back, I didn't mind it as much happening and when it did.
I think that it was one of her best moments. I mean, she's always had a strong presence. Obviously, she's very capable. This is like the first instance of her standing her ground and influencing others. I thought it was a pretty powerful, impactful moment.
Was it like, is it all because of the kid?
Yeah, no, I think it's almost
like a direct 180 for her in what, two episodes.
So you're clearly frustrated, you're annoyed by this.
No, I'm not necessarily annoyed, but I think me and Odyssey almost have the same reaction of like, what? Like where what is happening?
It just has to be the kid.
I think it's a catalyst. Also, she spent a little bit of time by herself. It's not really clear how many days she was apart from Odyssey. You know what I mean? It's got to be a couple days at least. You know what I'm saying? That's a lot of time to reflect. And I don't think the kid is the only reason, but it was the first domino. And then she's fighting in this game and she doesn't want to be part of the queen's side because she knows what the queen and everything Borderland stands for is not what she stands for, you know, and she just wants to, and she wants to the other people to open their eyes too. And they did.
Yeah. I think the main trigger for them is that one biker helmet guy who was sitting in the corner on the queen's team. Still, he just rolls out and he's like, yeah, I'd like to go home. And then that kind of, everyone else is like, you know what, you're kind of right, I want to go home too. And so after that interaction, the challenger team just quickly swings things back in their favor, so much in their favor that they're actually able to save 19 out of the 20 people and just kill the queen, which was like,
yeah,
some people should have stayed with the queen. I think like some people should have still been like, oh, queen ride or die, like we'll have faith in her. But It was whatever game. It was like the Usagi turnaround story game. Like, let's give her a reason to you know, have a purpose now.
I love the visuals. The visuals are sick. Of like, they would zoom out and we'd seen like the whole, you know, site and everyone's running and all the colors are flying around.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
That stuff was all very cool. Yeah, it was just like annoying in a sense. Like it should have just been like eight rounds. Instead of going up to what, round 14 or 15, where like there was at least eight rounds of the challenger where they did nothing, they talked, and then the time ran out on them, and it was like, okay, like come on now.
Yeah, in hindsight too, if I was a participant, you know that you kind of have an inkling now that you have to get all the face cards, you have to win to like advance the next level of whatever country or whatever you want to call it, you know, the next level of what it is. They should have won in the first round. They should have just let each other get tagged on the blue team and then boom, it's done. But
like they'd all be on the queen's team, you mean?
No, like they should have all just immediately allowed themselves to get tagged by the challengers and then the game would have been over in freaking 10 minutes.
You're right. But again, some of those people are with the queen.
Well, and three of them were team queen.
They were like, she has never lost a game. Like there was just their faith in her was too much.
Were they citizens then too? The three that were...
I took it as no.
We think no, but it's not clear.
I mean, but like Kuma's bandmates, were they not citizens?
They were citizens. So these probably were.
I think they might have been. I don't know.
So they just saved citizens then?
Yeah. So I don't. That's why I don't think they were citizens. I think the only citizen in that game was the queen.
Yeah. That just doesn't feel very consistent.
Just when was the idea brought up that if you stay on the queen's side, you live? It was when one of the existing team members said it to the challengers, right?
Yeah.
I think they just meant they can participate in the game as a challenger over and over, but they'll lose, but they won't die because they'll be on the other team over and over.
Yeah, maybe, like they will literally just be playing this one game. Like,
yeah.
That sucks. That sounds like torture.
I mean, yeah, and that's how Usagi kind of gets them to crack. But of course, at the end, so we have the queen losing, and Arisu, as always, has to press about what happens after the games get beat. But of course, again, we get another vague response out of the queen who just says, you'll have to wait and find out, and goes out like a complete badass. I think.
First ballot Hall of Fame death. just unbelievable. Kuma, I thought he did it like the best you could almost ever do it in episode, I guess, what, three? No, I was so unbelievably naive. This was amazing.
I said to Dave, I'm like, if I was her, I would just fucking jump. And then she was like, I'm going out on my own terms.
She's like a full gainer, too. Yeah, she like does like it was great. It was so good.
It was gainer, grandpa.
It was awesome.
It was so good.
But yeah, clearly the knowledge of not knowing what happens after the games are beat is just clearly just eating it at Odisu. He really wants to know. And then they beat the game. I'm actually now thinking about this. What happens to the kid? Like, so
they went back with the girl.
Oh, okay. So the kid goes back with the girl. And then so now Odisu and Usagi are walking around together, and they stumble across the stadium that Akane had played her game in. And they find some pools of water that are heated perfectly for a bath. Odisu suggests they go in together, but Usagi's like, nah, separate. And I was like, come on, like, this is the moment. And it is the moment. So yeah. Usagi screams. Odisu comes around the corner, and we see a group of elephants, a herd of elephants, I guess is what they're called. I really didn't have much to take away from this besides, like, this is the... Besides all the bunnies and things, like, we got the jaguar in season one, and now we're getting elephants. Like, the size of the creatures, coincidentally, is going up. I don't know if that has anything to do with how much vegetation there was around them, but open to theories, I guess. Open to talks before we get into the kiss.
Just, like, just about the elephants?
Yeah, like, do we have any thoughts on, like, where they came from? I think some of us were talking about them coming from a zoo, but then I was like, who the fuck's visiting a zoo in
Usagi
Borderland?
Says that.
Oh, is that what?
If it's like a direct representation of Tokyo, it would make sense, I guess. That
yeah,
the animals maybe also get replicated here.
Personally, it doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I don't know.
There was
a
jaguar or a tiger or whatever before too.
Like, I think the animal aspect is fine. I just think it would be ridiculous that if there was a zoo, why would it even have animals in it if it's in Borderland? Like, what? That doesn't do anything for anyone. It doesn't help with games. Maybe it does because it throws a turn in with, like, if you run across a jaguar, then you're fucked. But
yeah. But I mean, other than that, like, what, like, where would they have come from?
That's what I'm. I don't think in the ecosystem of Japan, like, elephants exist. I don't think they do.
I don't think they'd be able to survive.
Yeah. So obviously, it's something wonky is going on there. But
yeah, and so the elephants are taking baths. Odisu and Usagi are taking a bath, and things get so spicy. We get the fucking kiss, finally. It only took a season and a half, but that was a spicy kiss that got completely ruined by a dead body.
I thought that was going to happen earlier, because I thought there was going to be bodies in the water. Like, I thought they were going to touch one.
I literally, like, when they hopped in the pools, I was like, all right, Odisu is going to get scared shitless when he just sees a pool of dead bodies down there.
Yeah. I was a little greedy leading up to this. I thought there was a chance we were going to get, like, a full bang out of it.
Oh, now that's what I'm looking forward to. Now that's the next thing to look forward to, is that's the bang true. Scene.
Well, I said last episode that my recipe for, like, a perfect single or, like, group of episodes of Alice in Borderland, since we're doing them in doubles, include, like, the only thing that the last two episodes were missing was
this kiss.
An Odisu and Usagi kiss. So yeah, we finally got it.
Which is why amazing. These two episodes were great. Not just, and we also get the Chishiya game, so we'll get, we're almost there.
Should have been like their 18th kiss, but we'll take it.
Yeah. So as we said earlier, Kuina, in the meantime, has visited her her place. We do see the picture, which again begs the question of, like, how do they possibly have these images? Like, it's exact replica of the world that they knew. It's just crazy to think about, down to the every last detail. Anne is still wandering, and then kind of stumbles across a dead deer, which reminds her of her former life as, is it an EMT? Is that what they're called?
No, she was a forensic investigator.
Sorry. Yeah. Which was cool. I mean, we didn't get much information there. We already knew she was a forensic investigator, but she's investigating this dead body of a person who got murdered. And Aoki was like, what if it was Banda that committed the murder in the real world? It's like, pretty cool theory. If all these little small pieces just kind of click at some point.
Oh, that's definitely what I'm thinking now.
It could have been
going to be another connection.
I think it's likely, because the other forensic science was like, some kind of fucking sicko would have had to do this. And I mean, this guy Banda is an absolute neurotic piece of shit. So, I mean, like,
I think he's a cool guy.
I mean, he's a cool anime. He's a cool anime character, but he's not a cool guy that I would want to hang out with.
He's a sicko. He's weird.
All right, let's get to the meat and potatoes, baby. Next, we head to the Supreme Court for the King of Diamonds game. We get some decently cool characters sitting around a circle, but just to average out the level of coolness, of course, we have to bring in Chishiya. And right away, all of us were thinking it's going to be a fucking banger of a game. And it absolutely was. Again, not going to cover the details of what the rules and everything were, but this was essentially a mathematical thinking game. And to go back to the big reveal, as we said at the beginning of the episode, the King of Diamonds is revealed to be Numbatsu from the Whoa! And that was, it was so fucking cool when it's like Chishiya, you get to look at Chishiya and you're just like, oh yeah, it's a Chishiya game. And he's like talking to the king and he's like, oh, it's really you, Numbatsu. And then the camera panning to him just sitting with his arms crossed and just looking so menacing. I was so in. I knew right away this was it. And it lived up to the hype, honestly.
I guess I'll take a little bit of time to pat myself on the back. So if you listen to our season one coverage, you'll know that I was a rook on a series that we do, Rooks and Vets, where I was watching the show for the first time while everyone else was watching it for the second time or more. It doesn't really matter. And so it was kind of everyone was looking at me to make predictions and guesses and such. And I had guessed that number two was going to be the witch in that 10 of diamonds game, 10 of hearts game. And my reasoning was kind of spot on for him being the King of Diamonds, essentially, and that like I knew he knew way more than he let on. It was obvious that he had kind of disappeared, and we do find out throughout all these scenes that like he was talking to Momoka,
the dealer.
Oh no, you are talking to the witch, Momoka. Yes,
yeah,
yes.
Well, yeah, and also shout out to Momoka and Asahi, because I said last episode that I forgot their names, and I wanted to just. You know, produce their names this time to show them the respect that they deserve. But yeah, I basically had said that he was my number one guest for that kind of stuff. I knew he was suspicious as fuck. I love this like little reveal thing that he is the King of Diamonds. And I just laughed because I went to go re-listen to that episode and I literally said the words, obviously he's a calculator. And this whole game is literally them using a calculator essentially. So that just kind of made me laugh.
That's funny.
Yeah,
your assumptions were dead on, Kyle. Maybe you're kind of like a Yaba. You're a people reader. You got a good gauge.
Yeah, because I'm definitely not the numbers guy. Because I was so bad at this game. I tried to play along with. I played along with them. And I was terrible.
I think the most interesting aspect of the game was the multiplying the average by the 0.8. If the game would have already been pretty hard, I feel like at first, if you just left the cumulative average of the group as is and then just let people kind of fight there. But they really threw that wrench in there with making a 0.8. And you really see that later on as the rounds keep kind of going through and people are getting a little bit more pressed against the wall. I thought this was amazing. And of course, too, with such a great game, you have to have such brutal deaths. So quickly on the two guys that were at least I personally thought were going to be kind of relevant. They seem to be pretty capable, at least to me at first. But the two guys quickly get eliminated and it was brutal. Just like the first guy getting like poured sulfuric acid on him, just like drop by drop. And then until the full pot pours on him, he's like screaming and just shrill streaks. And it was painful to watch, man. And it was honestly interesting too, watching the sulfuric acid pour and then just watching the skin come to blood, become just bone.
Yeah, that was one of the worst deaths, I think. I think that was worst death we've seen. Insane. Yeah.
Just
and of
so
course,
unnecessary.
Yeah, right? Like, you already have a beam that can come down and kill you instantly. Why is number two, King of Diamonds, making you suffer? But, I mean, the first guy really got fucked because he got, like, dripped on first for way too long. And I'd be like, oh, my God. Like,
just dump it on him.
I'd be like opening my mouth, like trying to die as quick as possible, just so I don't have to deal with it anymore.
Trying to catch the drops in your mouth as they come.
Yeah, oh. Yeah. Like kill me.
She got off so easy. It literally just one dump crushed her.
Yeah.
And I mean, I guess because they're trying to build the suspense and the tension, but had to have been one of the worst ways we watched anyone die in the show.
I'm trying to think about it. And really, that's up there, especially if it's like, I feel like it's kind of fine if it's just all dumped on you, but the fact that it can potentially just drip on you just makes it worse, I think.
Bullshit.
Personally.
Did you guys try to play along?
Yes, early on, and like after the first round I was like, I'm not built for this. I didn't even try after the first round.
Really? You didn't like write down guesses or anything?
I didn't write down a guess, but in my head I think I was thinking around like 40.
Ah, that's exactly what I literally wrote down 40, and then I was like, okay, this chick's gonna be a wild card, like she'll be the dumb one. And then she literally guessed 40 and I was like, that's hilarious that I called her dumb and she literally guessed the exact number that I guessed.
I I had a little bit of trouble understanding why they kept going down to like as close to zero as you could.
Because everybody, by multiplying it by 0.8, it's going to be lower
than what you expect it to be. Yeah.
Than expect to be. So, but now after the first turn, everybody's guessing a little bit lower. And then they realized the lower you guess, the better chance you'll have
of being close to that average.
Because if you guess, 80%. There's legitimately no point in guessing.
I keep forgetting the 80%.
Yeah, there's no point in guessing anything like above. Like, this is just me pulling math out of my head. This isn't me actually doing math, but like, there's no point in guessing, like, let's say 75 and above, because average.
Technically 80, but yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Okay. That's why I'm stupid. Yeah, it's exactly 80. You're right.
They say it in the.
You're right. But. That's the thing. But I, at the end of the day, this was just an incredible game to watch, especially just with the breakdown, because Shishio was getting himself backed up into a corner. And this, it really is a guessing game almost at this point, unless you're Shishio. Yeah. But so we do get into the Numbutsu backstory a little bit. Turns out he used to be a lawyer that was true to his beliefs in the justice system, or at least in his own personal justice. But after seeing the world for what it is, just money being the thing that makes the world go round, he began questioning his morals and his personal justice and the ability to value a life.
Paul, did this remind you of anyone?
No. Who?
It reminded me of Marshall Erickson.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, I get it. He's an environmental guy. He's trying to do it, but this guy turned the other cheek, and yeah. Marshall never did.
It's true.
That's funny.
It just, I literally was just thinking about Marshall.
That's so funny.
Right after this, we get Shishio knocking out the girl, which I just wanted to mention just because I thought it was so cool how we visually get the pictures of all the 100 numbers, zero, or I guess it's 101 numbers with the zero. And like, he's like, okay, like people naturally just don't pick anything that like is a multiple of 10. We can eliminate all the prime numbers. And like, you see it physically, him removing them, and he narrows it down to two guesses, and he just goes with his heart again, like he did in the first game, and he does manage to get the girl out, which I just wanted to bring up because he is so fucking cool.
When they were doing that breakdown, they got to 69 and they took it away, and he says, you know, easy associations. Mm-hmm. So he didn't actually say like sex positions, because that's not as cool, but he was saying easy associations, which I guess is true. Like,
oh yeah, I mean,
if definitely. You see 69, you're not gonna pick it, because everybody's gonna think you're a 13-year-old immature kid.
Also, 69 is a common number, I guess, to pick, right?
He absolutely dunked on her.
Oh, it was crazy.
He just whipped his nuts out and just rubbed them on her face. It was so bad.
You were cheating.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, he literally explains his insane thought process and he goes, I just got lucky, I guess, by like the 50-50 shot, and like just destroys her.
Her face was kind of funny when she's like, lucky. It's like, or whatever she says, like just kind of processing what he says, and then the dunk.
Yeah, before she got turned to mulch. But she literally said, in the beginning of the game, like whether you're playing chess or checkers, you have to read your opponent and know what he does and who he is and what they stand for. So right away, he did that to the girl, knew she was going to pick higher and like with all the stuff. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, with going against the king, he knew he literally won because he read who the king was, why he chose this game, why, like what he stood for in his past. He was getting as much information out of him as he could to literally put him on the spot, and him actually learning, oh, I get it. You pick this game because you don't want to kill anybody. You want it to be their own fault or randomness. Like, you don't want to actually sentence anybody to death. And him actually figuring that out is 100% the reason why he won.
I can just gush over Shishio for just hours. Like, if we wanted to just make this a Shishio podcast, like, I'm just totally in with just only covering his outcomes for the rest of the series.
We'd have to have a whole episode on how bad the wig is, though. We have to slide in that.
Yeah.
Because the wig is pretty bad.
I love the hair. I love the hair.
To me, it's like endearing at this point, but it's a really bad wig.
Yeah, it's not
so,
the best.
I got to ask the question. Now that we got the backstory of him being a doctor, does that dip into your theory that he's involved in Borderland at all? Or do you think he's just a returning player?
I mean, of course, anytime we get a backstory like that, it's gonna feel like it disqualifies anyone almost from like.
But what if he experiences that and he's like, I need to create a world in which people just get fucked?
Yeah,
and
then I mean, I don't know. I mean, we get like we've gotten the all of the citizens' backstories, so the backstory doesn't like completely disqualify you. But I would say, I mean, it definitely takes like a big hit on it.
It deters me from your theory a little bit, Kyle. Also deters me from my own theory that like misfits, outcasts get zoomed into this place because I mean he's like one of the most you could be one of the most respectable jobs you could have is what he did. Mm-hmm. And I get it was like the organ donor and all that, but it's not like he was doing it. He was, his hands were tied, you know. He didn't want to do it.
Yeah, he didn't like it.
That's what the Nazi guard said, Alki.
Yeah, they were just doing their jobs.
Bro. Come on.
Just following orders, bro. But also, it just makes me like, I've 100% thought he was younger than this.
Oh, when we're getting into the reveal that it's his backstory, I'm like I'm clapping my hands. I'm like, all right, let's get into it. And I see the coat and I'm like, I literally thought Shisia was maybe like 18 years old. Like,
oh, okay. I thought older than that, but.
I thought that was Jisha in the bed sick as the kid.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And then it turns out he's like Doogie Howser, like child prodigy, like doctor.
Seriously.
It just makes him so much cooler. It just makes him so much cooler.
Yeah,
right?
He is cool.
He's so knowledgeable.
He's got layers like ogres.
And him turning...
Man, like onions.
Him turning that fucking pad around to show that he was actually picking 100 in the final round. I was like, you are... just so cool, man. He's not giving him an option. Like, you know, number two could say, okay, maybe he's staying this and lying, so maybe I can justify picking this number by picking it up and showing it to him. He's like, all right, it doesn't leave me a choice. I have to, you know, kill myself. I won't value my life above yours because I can't possibly value a life. And it really took me a second to actually appreciate how genius this was. I thought Chishi got lucky, but he breaks him down and he's so just chill and nonchalant that how can you not love this man?
It's ironic that the King of Diamonds didn't want to have to pick anyone to die, but he was actually like almost grateful in the moment that he did get to pick that Chishi was going to be the one to live over him. I just thought that was a pretty interesting twist on it because, like you had said, Paul, like Jishia at the end, the last two, three rounds, just forces his ants. He shows the King of Diamonds his card for the next three rounds. So it forces the King to have to choose, do I kill myself or do I kill him? And like I had said, the King chooses to save Jishia and kill himself, to which he's actually grateful for because he was actually able to make a free choice of his own volition. And so that granted him that moment of freedom that he was so desperately looking for, I guess, in these games.
I just feel like this, I don't know, this almost like gave me more questions than anything else of like when, what point in time did he become the King of Diamonds?
He wasn't the King of Diamonds at Beach. Like,
I think he was.
He was.
100%.
I think he was.
But like, what point in time at Beach?
I think it was the whole time because he said, I want to go back. And I wanted to experience it. Like he was trying and all that, the whole flashback when he's like, this is because of my ideals, the people telling him my ideals. He was realizing like.
But him and Mira have that conversation afterwards. And he's like, she says, now we get to create our own games. So
probably his first time being the King of Spades in this phase. Like he probably played through it before, which we already saw, like him running and the one kid helping him. Saying like some kid helped save me last game, so I'm gonna save you this game. Yeah.
He
played all the way through.
Point.
Yeah,
he was definitely
a player in that part of the flashback.
What I'm thinking is that him and Momoka were on the same tier. They weren't king. They weren't face cards of anything. They were just, what did they call them? What did they call Momoka?
Dealers.
Nah. They were dealers. And then because he had passed and killed so many people, they were like, all right, you're promoted. Like if you do this correctly, you now become the King of Diamonds and you get your game.
I don't know because. You said that Mira said it's our turn to create games. I don't think she said that. I think all she said, it's like, now it's our turn
to create games. She literally says, and he's like, I'm going to create a game that's fair and just for everyone.
Mm. Well, that's the other part that's confusing.
I think he was a dealer personally, but that's just like, me.
Why? like, I guess maybe there's, you can't like deny the promotion, but like, what is the whole point of him becoming the King of Diamonds? He seems way more thought out than just like doing it to enjoy it. But like, you think we're ever going to get that explained? He's dead.
Probably because he didn't want to die. And he figured the best chance of living was just being part of it.
Yeah, I guess.
And I think we're overthinking
it. Making a fair game.
We need to get the fucking reveal.
I mean, this is totally worth it to think about. He made the choice to become a citizen and then creates a game himself. Like, that's so, like, a mystery for us.
I feel like there's not going to be an option to go home. Because, like, why wouldn't all these people go back? I mean, they all say that world was tainted. Maybe, like, there's no kindness in that world or whatever.
So, yeah, there's no fairness. There's no fairness in the justice system out there. So I'm going to offer people a fair way to, I guess, die in this world a little bit.
We're also assuming that you can choose to be a citizen. Maybe that's just like you're got no choice. Like, you're a citizen now.
Yeah.
Also, that's also
he
true.
Maybe he picked. I don't know if you could pick, but clearly he's a calculated guy. He's constantly thinking. He's intuitive. Isn't the Diamond Games like the mind intelligence games? You know, they're like brain exercises. So it makes sense why he was the King of Diamonds in that aspect, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was just weird to me of like, he was the King of Diamonds in my mind in episode 8 of season 1, like during the Witch game. Like, Momoka says to him, "Your games and rules don't get to kill me."
Yeah, I agree with you, Kyle.
She says that to him.
She says it to him, but I didn't take it as like about him. You know what I mean? Like, I thought she was talking more about the general government body that is overseeing all this is what she was referring
to. True, but I think that she was saying, you and everybody on your level don't tell me what I get to do. And he would fall under that umbrella.
Yeah.
I guess we won't know until they beat the games. It's just such a... I just couldn't imagine being like, as a viewer, I just want to know all the answers, and Odysseus has to be the one to fight all these games just to get the answers, you know?
I don't know. I'm like, they just keep like opening more doors and giving us nothing of substance.
I don't think we're going to get, unfortunately, I'm not feeling that we're going to get a lot of answers to like some of these questions, like what face and suit do you get to be, or like anything like that. I'm pessimistic in that aspect. I don't think we're going to actually see that decision making process
I would agree
unfold, which sucks, but it is what it is. Like, we're
I
gonna
could see that. Yeah, I could see that.
I think that they're gonna get to like the citizen level, whatever. They're gonna beat the face cards because it's inevitable, and then after that they're gonna like tear it down from there. They're not gonna have an opportunity to be game leaders.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't think they would ever want to be.
Yeah.
They, as in obviously we're talking about
Timos. Exactly. So in that aspect, they're just gonna say, fuck all this shit, we're gonna tear you down, and then that's how the final arc will be, you know?
Mm-hmm. Just no answers. We just have nothing to work with here at all.
We'll get some answers. We're just gonna have to make some inferences as well, which sucks, but you know.
I feel like we gotta get something in these last two here, right?
Yeah, I mean, we got two episodes left, and we've done nothing but ask more questions.
Yeah, my literal last note is like, I don't know what to expect of these last two episodes, because after Chishiya walks out of the King of Diamonds and winning, it's just like that kind of like cheesy season ending vibe where it's like we get shots of like all of our characters doing their own thing, and then it's like Arisu and Usagi like looking out over the city kind of thing, and it ends the episode. So I really have no idea, like, is the King of Spades even going to be... the King of Spades has to be dealt with, right? In this next recording, you think we're going to get that done?
Well, I was going to ask, if do you think the face cards are going to be done by the end of this season?
Definitely
or not.
I don't know.
I would be shocked. I feel like
it's a chance. I mean, there's got to be other people doing stuff. Yeah, we already were introduced to Yaba and Bunda, and like, they're two high caliber players. You got to assume there's at least a few more of them able to take down games. I mean, we saw Arisu walk past a face card game getting taken down. Kuina beat one. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, I guess we're probably halfway through the games, if I had to guess. They've probably conquered 6 or 7-ish games, if I had to guess. And
I predict that it's going to end the last episode, or towards the last episode, it's going to end with them reuniting as a group, like us, you know, quote unquote, Annie, etc. And excuse me, and then it's going to be like, all right,
Annie.
Yeah, let's.
I think you said that earlier too.
Let's lock arms, and I don't even know where I'm getting that from, but let's lock arms and you know,
make love,
tackle the final obstacle.
Ooh, look, I have the mirror quote. It's at last, it's our turn.
There you go. See, I was right.
Yeah, and so, he says I'm gonna make a game that's fair. But I wrote it down because I thought it was so funny that he says he wants to make a game that's fair. Why is the acid necessary? Because he's also like doing that to himself. Like, he's insane. Why would he ever make it a possibility that that's course. The way that he would die? He's just a psychopath in that sense, which is wild. And also the Shishia quote at the end after he wins, I'm pretty sure Shishia says this to him.
Yeah.
And he says, "You quit while you were ahead. I gave you that choice. I'm so jealous of you."
I was going to ask what you guys think of that, because is he saying he doesn't have that choice? He doesn't have the ability to escape this game. But like, I understand where he's coming from in the sense that Chishia gave number two that choice because he said what number he was picking. So he said, "You get to choose who live or dies." He gets to escape. Is that what Chishia's saying? Like, "You lucky bastard, like you got to get out of this and I still have to play this game."
I took it more as like he was envious of that he had the ability to make an actual decision, but I might have not looked too much into it, I guess.
It was just weird to me because, I mean, I guess like really like,
we hadn't seen that side.
Like, Shishia could quit right now if you wanted to.
Yeah.
It could play into your theory, Kyle, that he knows
maybe
more.
Maybe he literally can't quit.
Yeah, maybe he literally can't quit. Maybe he's like, who knows? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we'll see.
Kyle, didn't you say aliens earlier?
I did say aliens earlier.
Aliens, yeah. He's an alien, and this is their coming of age like story.
That's why he has a bad wig. He's like in a human body that he doesn't understand.
Yeah, Men in Black style. Yeah.
And another thing, too, was it seemed like number two and Shishia had like a certain level of respect for each other, especially with number two towards Shishia. And it seems like, why wouldn't he? Shishia doesn't ask because he's a fucking cocksmack, but. Like, why didn't he give him any more answers about the world? Like, the only thing I'm thinking was that, like, maybe, obviously, the other people do it for selfish reasons. Like, the queen of what? Spades. Was never going to give up the information because she thought too highly of herself. But, like, Kiyuma maybe didn't want to give, like, paint this huge target on Iris's back by, like, the higher-ups, whoever we want to call them, wherever they are, knowing that Arisu knows some things she shouldn't know. And then maybe number two, the same thing for Chisia, that like, I can give you the information and you'll have it if you want it, but like, it's going to be worse. You're going to be worse off now that I told you, because you're going to have a huge target on your back, which also leads more into the Queen of Spades wanting Arisu on his team. And just my theory of like, it's more than just for the game. Like, they want Arisu. Someone wants Arisu.
Maybe.
I feel like somebody definitely wants Arisu as like a citizen. Like, they're thinking like, fuck, this dude is so smart. He could like make the best games and be one of the best rulers.
And also, I guess going back to King of Spades, Dave, in the beginning, like maybe he didn't want to kill Arisu. Maybe he was going to capture him.
That would be interesting. That would definitely explain why he didn't fire right away. That would be that'd be a good twist, actually, now that you mention it. I feel like that would make a lot more sense to me.
I have a question. At the end of the jail game, did Chishia ask the Jack of Hearts any questions, or was it the other characters?
Didn't seem like they did.
They interrogated him. They were going to cut him up, and then the Jack said the wrong suit, and a laser came down and killed him. And they were like, "Oh damn!" Like, he gave up before he could have any fun. So that being said, I would assume that any of the face cards, like the Queen or even number two, the King of Diamonds, right here, would get lasered if he actually did say anything. Like Momoka, when she goes, "I'm a dealer," or not Momoka, but Momoka's friend, when she goes, "I'm a dealer," and then gets lasered immediately down. Maybe if they say anything like, "Oh, like when you beat the game, blah, blah, blah," laser comes down and kills.
But then there's no point in not withholding that information. If, like, we've seen it every game. Yeah. If you're going to die in those 2 minutes that we see after every game where one of the citizens can give a speech, there's definitely enough time for them to be like, blah, 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 here's all the information you need, and then laser.
But that spoils the fun, right? I mean, they want them to have fun.
Right? At the end of the day, it spoils the fun. You're absolutely right.
I don't think number two thinks like that.
I don't think Chisia would even like bother asking anybody. I think he knows too well that he just, his expectations to get any information out of these people is so low. There's just no point in asking. He just is the patient kind of guy that would just wait till the end to get his answers.
I think you guys are right in these things, but that's not really my question. My question, or really just my point, is like, I'm pointing out that I don't think Chisha asked the Jack of Hearts any questions. Irisu has every single chance he has been able to, right? He also didn't ask the number two any questions. You know, I think maybe I'm reading into Kyle's theory too much about how he's involved somehow. Maybe he's not asking because he knows.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, maybe I would be okay with that. Yeah. I'd say, yeah, the combo, the two things, obviously, I have the idea that Chisia is on the take, he's on the inside, whatever. And then also the idea that, like, the entire purpose of all this is to find, like, a singular person, almost like a tournament of sorts of, like, finding one particular person for whatever goddamn reason.
To freeze their sperm and or eggs for the future so they could just only have people like that person.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. But, I mean, we'll see what happens.
Whatever.
I don't know. I agree with you, Aki. I think that points more, like, that points towards the idea that maybe he's in on some things, but also the backstory makes me question it because it was too normal of a backstory.
Yeah.
I just, like, somebody like him, how can you not ask questions? Don't you want to know? Or is he trying to make it as hard for it? For himself as possible. Like, does he love the challenge that much?
I personally think it's the second reason. I mean, obviously, I'm still honestly a little on board with Kyle's theory of just, she is in on it. Like, and everything we've said definitely accumulates to that reasoning for me. But I still just, especially with the backstory, I still just think that Chisia just, he's just not the kind of guy to ask those questions because he just knows he's going to get the answers when he wins. Kind of like,
I mean, maybe he already,
it's his confidence, kind of.
Maybe he already knows the answers and that's why he's not asking, because he's already played the game before. So he's just going through this again.
Well, I mean, him not asking because he wants a challenge definitely fits into his, like, makeup.
Yeah, for sure.
You know? I mean, that's true. You know, so yeah. Whatever. This is like the fun. This is the fun of it. You're trying to analyze every fucking thing. So.
And he hasn't really met his match, which again kind of ties into him being on the inside of it. Like, this is all set up for him to look for his match or something. But
this has definitely been the hardest game for him though so far, I think.
Oh yeah, probably, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, he literally put it in someone else's hands. I feel like he never ends up doing that.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. I don't know. The burning question is obviously just, how do these people become citizens? Like we've understood essentially that they were former players, but, like, did they ever get to a point where they also battled citizens? Like, did they just replace old citizens when they became citizens?
I think,
like,
this is
the first time the face card stuff has ever happened.
Like, I think those kind of answers will definitely get by the end. Mm-hmm. But just right now, I can't answer that. Yeah. I don't know.
Because, the dealers, like, the last time we saw them all, the dealers, and we were calling them the suits last season, the people that were betting on the stuff, like, they all got wiped out. Like, do they all get wiped out every time we move to a face card round? I mean, don't know, but...
They fucked up, though. This is the reason why they died, because information got leaked. That was, like, the only reason why they died.
Are you talking about the dealers in the...
Like, the dealers in suits, yeah.
Well, I don't know.
Time will tell. When we're done this series, or when we're done this season,
we're not going to have any answer.
We should look up how many chapters. I'm sure one of those, like, fandom sites.
I tried
post, like, how many chapters just
on Reddit.
Seasons 1 and 2 covered of Alice in Borderland.
Literally, my Google question is, how many volumes was the first season of Alice in Borderland? But I haven't been confident. Like, I can't just, like, I'm not trying to just randomly click.
You should honestly just write Reddit on the end of that in Google.
Okay, I'll do that afterwards, and then we'll give the answers to the listeners as well, unlike this show, because they're not going to give us anything in the next, well, who knows, but...
The last thing, too, I just, after re-listening to some of our season one stuff, I completely forgot that there's chips in people.
Like, they're constantly, well, I guess that makes sense.
They have chips inside of them. I mean, it makes sense, because, like, how does the laser locate them and stuff, but, like, and that is another thing. Like, are they real bodies?
And they've been mentioning the King of Spades. Like, I guess he's also a very good tracker, but, like, they make it sound like he can pinpoint their location, too. So maybe he has, like, chip locators. Either way, that's going to be it for our coverage of episodes 5 and 6. 5 and 6, not 6. Be sure to listen and hang around for our episodes 7 and 8 coverage. That is going to be, the expectations are still very high for the show. And I do very much expect the show to land the ending, even if a lot of questions are still unanswered. That's going to be it for us today, guys. If you like what you heard, be sure to give Bingetown TV a follow on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Patreon. Be sure to subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts or wherever else you get your podcasts from. We've got a lot of great shows coming out. We've got the Arcane Pitchtown that we're maneuvering through as well. We've got the Yellow Jackets coming out in January. A lot of cool interviews and side content coming out for you guys as well. So be sure to give that all a listen. Once again, this is Bingetown TV. And thanks for listening.
Ikidikimasu.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.